Good morning, Mr. Catron. You may proceed.
May it please the Court. The fundamental issue before this Court today is the interpretation of Section 38 U.S.C. 7104 with regards to Mr. Green's application under the Equal Access to Justice Act, otherwise known as EJIA. Today our remarks will focus on the Veterans Court's interpretation of Section 7104, and we will rely on the briefing to address the issues under Sections 5103 and 5107.
What's the agency error here?
The agency error is the failure to make the decision based on the entire record.
But my understanding is that that argument was not made to the CAVC the first time around.
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor.
Well, can you show me where?
Where was it made?
And, Your Honor, it's at 857 record.
Page 1?
It's 857.
This is on the attorney's side. That's not the question. The question is, where was it made the first time around?
Sure. I believe we stated it in our opening brief on 380. We stated that the board is required to consider all potentially applicable provisions of law and regulation.
That's the best you can do?
A381. We also stated that the board's holding concerning informed consent is improper. And we also said at A384 that consent was not obtained in accordance with VA's regulations.
I thought you were going to refer to A365.
Oh, in front of the board, yes. We did identify the issue to the board at A365, where we specifically refer to the Section 1732. And stated that the board, or sorry, that the VA had not complied with its duty to obtain Mr. Green's informed consent.
Okay. Mr. Caprin, I know we're close to each other, but if you could speak up a bit, I think it would make it easier for all of us. But on A365, there is a reference to Section 1732, but it's little more than just a parroting of what the regulation says.
Well, according to this court's decision in Comer, that the board is supposed to liberally construe the veteran's argument, and we respectfully submit that that was sufficient. In addition, the board did address the informed consent issue in its holding.
Of course, as I read the board's decision, it seemed to me that the board certainly appreciated that informed consent was a factor and simply concluded that there was informed consent based on the fact that there were little snippets of information in the record to indicate that there was consent. Now, there was no direct reference to a signed statement of informed consent, but the document was missing.
Correct.
And I think everybody now certainly acknowledges that that was the case. But the board's decision, let me restate this. In what way did the board err when the veteran didn't specifically say that the written document with informed consent was missing, didn't say anything specifically other than I wasn't properly informed of all the risks, and the board simply concludes based on all of the evidence that, well, there was informed consent.
Well, A19 of the board's holding it stated that there was no medical evidence of record indicating that the veteran lacked informed consent. And that is that contradicts what actually what the record holds, where there's a document at A201 specifically identifying that the signed consent form, which was required for Mr. Green's catheterization procedure, was not located.
Prior to that time, had you argued that the informed consent was missing or not available?
No. From the record, it does not appear that way.
The first time you argued that was in the reply brief to the Veterans Court, right?
I respectfully disagree. We raised that argument, at least in our opening brief.
Where?
A384 consent was not obtained in accordance with VA's regulation. And also in our, after the...
Well, where does it say that? Where on 384 anyway?
It's the title of the Part 3. Consent was not obtained in accordance with
what
VA's regulation.
What page are you on?
Oh, sorry, A384.
384.
So the error you are asserting, the administrative error, is the statement by the board that there's no medical evidence of record showing that the veteran's VA treatment was faulty or lacked informed consent.
Correct. And in addition to the fact that if that's not the case, they discounted the signature consent evidence.
It's the negative negligence per se theory that you didn't raise until you filed your reply brief, correct?
We raised that argument at the earliest possible opportunity.
Which was your reply brief?
At the we referred to it at least inherently, at least within our original brief. And in response, the secretary, in his response, stated that we had not obtained that. We had not raised that argument previously before the board.
We have a remand before us. Why should we view you as a prevailing party in a remand situation?
Because it involves the interpretation of 7104, which requires that the board makes its decisions based on the entire record and in consideration of all applicable law and regulations. It does not place the burden on Mr. Green to make that argument. It specifically places the burden on the board to provide that evidence, or to provide its holding based on the entire evidence, by stating that the board's decision shall be based on the entire record.
Yeah, but the problem is that I don't see that you raised that argument before the Veterans Court, nor do I see that the Veterans Court based its decision on that argument.
I respectfully disagree that we did in fact raise that argument before the board, and we also raised that.
Where is that argument about the board's failure to consider the entire record made before the Veterans Court?
So we said A517, Your Honor.
No, but that's the attorney's fee. You keep trying to refer to the attorney's fee. That doesn't matter. The question is, was this argument raised the first time around to the Veterans Court?
I respectfully submit that we didn't have to.
No, maybe, but that's not my question. My question is, did the veteran raise the argument?
At the merits stage. Yes, we did, Your Honor.
Where?
A427-428. We specifically refer to the statute. According to this law, 428 and 429. I apologize.
That's the reply brief.
Yes.
Did you raise it in the opening brief?
The opening was the.
Let me see if I can help out. Other than an inherent argument, did you make a clear and concise argument on this issue in your opening brief?
In the opening brief at the merit stage?
Yes.
We stated specifically that the board had failed to comply with its duty. I believe it's 380. We stated specifically, at least there, that the board has implemented 1151 with the regulation, and it appeared based on the record that the board had not followed the applicable law and regulation that it was required to. Section 360, the VA's own regulation 3.361 requires that the VA provide, that there's three prongs to that regulation, one of which specifically identifies Section 17.32, the VA's own informed consent regulation. Now, Section 17.32 identifies situations in which oral or signature consent is required. And according to, and for procedures like Mr. Green's heart catheterization procedures, riskier procedures, that is, signature consent is required in order
But the question is, did you argue that the board had failed to comply with the duty to assist by looking at the entire record and raising the issue for the veteran? I don't see that that argument was made before the Veterans Court in the opening brief.
I respectfully submit that it was two different phases. The first round of briefing was with respect to the whether Mr. Green was entitled to benefits based on the lack of informed consent. The EJA application is where it became applicable and whether there was...
Let me see if I can help clarify what my concern is. It seems to me there are two possible agency errors here. One was the failure to consider the entire record and perform the duty to assist. The other one is to fail to address and adjudicate the lack of informed consent. Either one of those might be an agency error, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
So are you alleging that both of those were agency errors here or just the first?
Both, Your Honor.
Okay. So, but it seems to me that as to the first one, as to the duty to assist, I don't see that at the merit stage that argument was made to the Veterans Court.
We respectfully submit that it's inherent within this opening brief, and that at this stage of the merit stage, we did not have to address that there was a.
What does inherent mean? It's in there somewhere. It wasn't raised, but it lurked in the background.
We argued specifically that the board failed to address the lack of signature consent and failed to meet its duty, its burden in order to satisfy its burden under Section 7104. That is to make its decisions based on the entire record and make its decisions based in consideration of all applicable law and regulations. We continually refer to these regulations in this brief.
But it seems to me that at least the passage on 380 and 381 may support what you just said. But like Judge Dyke, I still fail to see where there is any argument at all presented with respect to the duty to consider the entire record. And I don't think you explicitly said that anywhere. Certainly there's nothing that I read that suggests that. Maybe there is some inherent duty, but that was not argued. Unless there's something else you can point to.
Well, I see my time is almost up.
Well, that's okay. Just if there's something else you can point to, that's fine.
A376 indicates that the board appeared to rely on the VA clinical discharge summary which states informed consent was obtained, even though the record failed to include any signs and symptoms. And the record there, I believe that corresponds to A201.
Yeah. So there's nothing explicit about the duty to consider the entire record. All right, we'll give you a couple of minutes if necessary for rebuttal, and let's hear from the government. Good morning, Ms. Devine. Take your time.
May it please the Court. It's important to understand what really happened in this case before the Board and the Veterans Court. The Board did, in fact, discuss and make a finding with regard to the informed consent issue. The Board considered the evidence of record in accordance with 38 U.S.C. 3.361d and determined that there was informed consent in Mr. Green's case. On his appeal to the Veterans Court for the remand order to the Board was issued, Mr. Green argued that the Board should have performed a different analysis as a matter of law with regard to the informed consent issue, that 3.361d in combination with 17.32 as a matter of law required a finding of negligence if the form was missing from the hospital medical file. This involves an interpretation of the agency's regulations. Mr. Green did not claim this failure to interpret the regulations in the legal manner he proposed constituted a violation of the duty to assist before the court issued its remand order.
Okay, so maybe he didn't argue the duty to assist. Okay, the difficulty pointing out to us where that happened. But he's saying alternatively, look, we argued that the informed consent finding was wrong. That was a question of agency error, which we raised before the Veterans Court at the merit stage. So why is he wrong about that?
Well, the Board did actually, in fact, consider the informed consent issue. And this is separate and apart from the legal issue of the interpretation of the regulations. Now, the interpretation of the regulations as a legal matter as to whether 17.32, in fact, required a finding of negligence under 3.361D is a separate question. In fact, that question was the one raised before the Veterans Court. And that question, as a matter of law, was not raised before the Board in the first instance. And in this circumstance, the Veterans Court could have passed on that issue, could have considered it before it, could have also not considered the issue because it wasn't raised below, but in fact, what the Veterans Court did in this case is said, well, there's this legal question. As a matter of prudence, we're not going to judicial review here on the merits is premature. We're going to allow the veteran to consider this issue in the first instance, or the veteran to present this to the Board in the first instance, and allow further consideration and for the Board to consider to pass on this issue.
But isn't the statement made on A19, that there's no medical evidence of record showing that the treatment lacked informed consent, incorrect?
That there's no medical evidence that would, in fact...
That it lacked.
Right, exactly.
It's like a double negative, I realize.
Right.
But nonetheless, there was no written consent form found at the time in the record. And doesn't that suggest that perhaps there wasn't consent?
Well, there's many parts of the record. In fact, the double negative is difficult to say, but there are many parts of the record. In fact, the only parts in the record that refer to informed consent state that although the record was not in the hospital medical file, first of all, that there was a doctor there to take his informed consent. Second of all, there's twice in the record the heart catheterization report that stated that informed consent was obtained. And in response to questions by the regional office to the hospital, there was evidence that indicated that the form was sent home with the veteran, with Mr. Green. There's no evidence that stated that he didn't sign a consent form, and there's no evidence that would state that he did not, in fact, provide informed consent. Now, again, the double negative, but there's no evidence that would indicate that the form wasn't signed. But really, what the issue here is, we're getting to a legal interpretation question. If you look at 3.361D, the statute says that the board will consider substantial compliance with 17.32. 17.32 states that the medical professionals of the VA are required to obtain signed informed consent. Now, in fact, there is another section of 17.32 that states that form should be included in the hospital file, but the fact that that's included in 17.32 does not necessarily make, as a matter of law, 3.361D a finding of negligence. That would be an interpretation of the regulation that the board could, in fact, make, and, in fact, the Veterans Court could, in fact, make. The Veterans Court in this case stated that it would not reach the judicial review on the merits because it was premature on this particular legal issue and allow the veteran to present that issue.
But it seems to me you may be parsing the legal issue in too fine a manner. I mean, what I understood the Veterans Court to be saying was he didn't raise the informed consent issue before the board. He raised it for the first time on appeal here. We're going to, as a matter of discretion, send it back to the board to address that issue. Right.
If you look at the remand order itself, the Veterans Court stated not that he had not raised informed consent, but that he had not raised the issue of negligence per se, which is negligence per se would mean that 17.32, when the board considered substantial compliance with 17.32 as bearing on the issue of negligence, whether that particular circumstance would, as a matter of law, negligence per se, create negligence under 3.36.
Well, but if you look at A4,
A84?
A4.
A4.
Which is the the attorney's fees decision. The court says at the bottom of the page, for the first time on appeal to this court, the appellant raised the theory that surgery was performed without his informed consent.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're basically saying that there was no agency error alleged because, properly alleged, because that issue was raised for the first time on appeal to the Veterans Court, and that they, as a matter of their discretion, were sending it back to the board even though he hadn't properly raised the issue. No?
Correct. And that perhaps this decision was not as artfully crafted as it could have been, but you have to be reading this in combination with what the remand order actually said. The remand order didn't make this finding of failure to raise informed consent. The remand order stated negligence per se was not raised before the board.
Are you saying that he did raise informed consent before the board?
Yes, he did raise 17.32 as being a requirement. But he didn't. That what the Veterans Court found in the remand order was not that he raised informed consent for the first time. The argument was that whether the veteran raised the issue, specific issue, and this is a legal issue. It's different than the factual issue.
So he raised informed consent, but he didn't argue that it was negligence per se? I
correct.
Mean, isn't that expecting a lot of a pro se? I mean, even though he had a union or whatever, a veterans representative.
Right. The standard under 3.361 is that the board will consider different pieces of evidence on the record, including the signed informed consent issue. There's no evidence the board didn't consider that. The question is whether, as a matter of law, the board was required to find that there was negligence.
So if you have a situation where you have a missing informed consent form, does that standing alone constitute evidence that informed consent was not obtained? And in this situation, if there was other considerations, other evidence considered, what were they?
The other considerations would be looking at the rest of the record, which indicated that informed consent was obtained, and the regional office, though he contacted the hospital stated that form was sent home incorrectly with the veteran, but not that the informant...
So don't those issues have to be resolved first before you have a negligence per se issue to raise?
Well, in accordance with Newhouse versus Nicholson, the board is presumed to consider all evidence on the record. So in doing its evidentiary decision, there's no evidence, and in fact, it's Mr. Green's burden to show prevailing party. There's no evidence that they didn't consider the lack of informed consent when making its overall factual determination. But this is a different issue. This is a different issue. This is an issue where it was not the overall evidence. It was not the consideration of the overall evidence. It was the weight that was provided the fact that the informed consent was not in the hospital records.
See, what this boils down to, it seems to me, is you're agreeing that he raised the informed consent issue, but that wasn't sufficient to raise the negligence per se issue.
Correct. It's questioning the, again, it's the board has the obligation to consider all evidence on the record. Correct. So the question is whether the fact that there was no form specifically required the board.
No, I don't think that's the issue I'm talking about.
Okay.
Well, let's put that aside. I don't think they've shown that they raised that issue in the merits case. Okay? I don't see any place in the briefs where they raised that. But there's there's one possible agency error is the failure of the board to consider this on its own. Let's put that aside. Their other contention is that they raised the informed consent issue directly before the board, before the Veterans Court at the merits stage. That was sufficient to raise the negligence per se issue, and that the board remanded reflected a decision that there was agency error in not considering the negligence per se issue when they raised the informed consent issue. That's putting the best face on it, okay?
Okay.
Why isn't it sufficient to raise the negligence per se issue when they argue about a lack of informed consent?
Well, my first answer would be that the question that the veteran specifically raised the issue sufficient to put the board on notice was not raised until the motion for panel consideration by Mr. Green. But that particular issue was not raised in the merits stage, so how could the remand order be implicitly based on that agency error? That would be my first answer to that question.
So what 384 is a brief asking for in bank, or what? Is that what you're saying?
There's a motion for panel consideration, which happened after the merit stage, after the EJIA determination by the judge of the Veterans Court, single judge panel.
But isn't the brief on 360 addressed to the individual judge before the request for panel consideration?
368?
Yeah, 368, and they refer to 384 in that.
I guess I have the wrong number. I see the front of the appellant's brief. The question of whether he raised it, in fact, before the board, or implicitly raised it before the board, that's a different question than whether the board failed in its duty to assist. I hope I'm not confusing.
It's not the duty to assist. It's confusing. The question is whether they raised this issue about the lack of informed consent, whether that raised the negligence per se issue.
Whether they being Mr. Green?
Yes.
Okay. First of all, the consideration of whether the this question itself is an application of law to fact question. Whether it was specifically raised before the board and is in with established case law from this court is not reviewable by this court. As far as whether negligence per se was raised during the merit stage, that was not contested by Mr. Green. The question of whether he, in fact, raised that issue. Whether his failure to raise that one particular issue, Your Honor, is the question you have is, isn't that a lot to expect as a veteran? Am I understanding your question correctly?
Yeah, when he raised the informed consent issue, does he have to carry it forward and say it's negligence per se?
Well, the responsibility of the board is to consider the evidence of record, consider the regulations, and to make a finding based on that the record and the regulations. But this is a specific way of reading those regulations. This is there's no requirement that the agency read the regulations in this way. It's a very specific question. We would say that informed consent issue was passed on. Maybe this one particular issue was not raised. But again, whether it was raised before the board is a question this court cannot pass on.
Assume that there's no other evidence with respect to the missing form, and all we know is that the form is missing. Is that sufficient for negligence per se?
From the government's position on that issue, that would be a board determination. That would be a board's interpretation of its own regulations.
So isn't that what the remand is supposed to do?
Well, the remand was supposed to give Mr. Green an opportunity to present this legal issue to the board and say, hey, this is how I suggest, I see that I'm out of time, but this is how I suggest that you read the regulations. The board looks at those regulations, says, okay, we could read it that way.
Why couldn't we find that they prevailed on that issue? And they're a prevailing party in obtaining a remand in order to visit the issue as to the missing form and to identify whether that constitutes negligence per se in this situation.
Are you asking how that could be error? Or that could be considered?
Why should we not decide that?
Why should you not decide whether it's
that,
error?
That it was agency error, and they're a prevailing party because they convinced us that they're a prevailing party in this particular issue, and there's an agency error.
It would involve an interpretation of regulations, which the agency should be able to pass on in the first instance. Conceivably, if the regulation were to be clear and state that it was negligence per se for the board to fail to, that it was negligence per se if the regulation was not, or the form was not in the file, conceivably, if the Veterans Court were to make that finding and say that it was incorrect for the board to not apply the regulations in that way, it depends on the language of the remand order. And the remand order didn't require the board to do anything. Now, if the board were to require the, I'm sorry, my
that's head,
if the board would require the board, or excuse me, if the Veterans Court could require the board to read the regulations in this way, that one can make an argument, yes, that that's based on agency error, but that's not what happened here.
So basically what you're saying is that the Veterans Court said this issue wasn't properly raised, that that's binding on us because that's a law of fact issue, and that all they were doing was, as a matter of grace, allowing him to go back and raise this issue, which
exactly.
He hadn't properly raised before.
That's exactly, Your Honor, what our position is. And for these reasons, we respectfully request that the court affirm the decision of the Veterans Court.
Thank you very much. Mr. Capron, we'll give you 2 minutes of rebuttal time if you need it.
In our opening CAVC brief on the merits, we argued that the board committed error when it failed to address all law and regulations because it had erred in failing to require signature consent. That's A370.
Okay, but what the government is saying is that the question of whether you properly raised the issue is a law of fact question. We can't pass on it. We have to accept their ruling that you didn't properly raise the negligence per se issue, and that what they were doing was as a matter of grace allowing this to go back even though the issue hadn't been properly raised. Why are we not stuck with the Veterans Court's characterization of what happened?
We respectfully disagree, Your Honor, that this is an application of law of fact. In the court's Kelly decision, it was disputable whether the veteran raised that specific issue in front of the board. Yet this court still determined that it had jurisdiction according to that it was based on a legal standard that was without disputed facts. And as we indicated in our briefing, the Secretary has provide any material disputed facts. Then, after we raised the law and regulation issue in our opening brief, the VA came up with a new theory that the board had not adequately developed the record, and that's at A421. Only then did we have our 7104 argument with respect to the record. If the board had never considered the issue, as the VA argues, then it failed to comply with Section 7104 with respect to that it failed to make its decision based on the entire record. And we refer to that at A428 through 429, A430 through 431. Moreover, in addition, the rating examiner saw that it was an issue, that signed consent was an issue. He asked for the signed consent form and flagged it in the record. The board had the same record before it, including the memo indicating that signed consent form could not be located. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We thank both counsel. The case is submitted.